Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Welcome to the show that's brought to you with Levi Solicitors. You can get a 10% discount on your legal fees at levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. Dan here with Michael, and Rob is on the show today. Propaganda, the show where we find out what's being said about Leeds United by you and by the opposition fans. If you're listening to the audio version, you can check this out on YouTube and vice versa. We'll do the Leeds United half first. We got our TSB Plus members to send feedback on the match ball. So this is the stuff that they picked out from that show and from the game itself. We didn't quite win ugly, we drew ugly, I think is the fairest description of it. But it's another point on the board. And I think the general span of opinion is from misery to pragmatism and then some stuff somewhere in between.
There's probably on balance more negativity than anything else, but a lot of the negativity is tinged with, but you know.
It's hard not to be fine. Negative, yeah. When you're 16th in the table.
Mm. Well, I mean, you obviously weren't here for the match ball, Rob. What did you make of it as a whole? Thrilling?
I felt like after the Watford game, I was too negative and pessimistic. And I thought, do you know what? I'm going to make a real effort to be positive and then watch the game. It was a very, very hard game to love, let's say that. But I think after Watford, I think, yeah, there's just an acceptance of we need points. That's what it's about now, isn't it? It's about results and not performances. So, yeah, a good result.
I had some feedback on this via, Greg, who is a guy in America. Hello, Greg. He hangs around in LA, lives there. He's going to watch the Arsenal game with former Leeds United legend Robbie Elliott. You remember, obviously, Robbie's 7 games fondly in 2000.
I once interviewed Robbie Elliott about those 7 games.
well, we were chatting, Greg and I, the other day, and he was saying that Robbie Elliott had said to him, "Draws will keep you up." And I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess so."
I found it quite interesting seeing everyone else's reaction kind of outside of Leeds United, like outside of a fan base. And on Monday Night Football, Carragher and Robbie Keane were, you know, talking about Jesse Marsh as point proven and he's proven all the doubters wrong. This is good. This is how you should be in a relegation battle. So, I don't know. Yeah, a couple of people think this is good. This is the Premier League, isn't it?
It feels like there's almost a weird desire for us to be more like this throughout the Bielsa era. Like last year, people, when we lost heavily but finished ninth, some people were like, "No, you need to be more respectful of the Premier League. You can't play like that." And people are like, "Good, they're going and grinding out ugly points. That's the way it should be." Which I guess is tough for us to watch. But
as we're saying on the match ball, Michael, it's not a binary choice, is it? And it's not. But we could defend doggedly like we are doing, but also try and be more expansive going forward. And by more expansive, I mean passing to our own team.
Yeah, I mean,
might be a start.
I do think we would have lost that game a couple of months ago as well. Yeah. So a point from that perspective is definitely good.
And both things can be true at the same time, that, you know, the pragmatism was needed, but it's not particularly nice to look at. But if it keeps us up, I'll be absolutely delighted. If we get to post Brentford in another, was it 4 weeks now? And we're still in the Premier League, I'll be like, all right, it's been a horrible year, but so be it. We've stayed up.
Yeah, I think so as well. It's interesting from the feedback. A couple of people felt the need to get in touch on 75 Minutes. Someone with no name and John P both got in touch. No name was complaining about a loss to Palace. They were guessing that we would concede in those last minutes, which I suppose we did look a bit like conceding. There were chances, weren't there? Not brilliant ones, but there were half chances for people.
Weirdly, I never felt like we were going to concede in that game, even though we were under the cosh for a lot of it. It was in an odd way because we seemed to be that much more defensively resilient.
Yeah, I didn't quite feel as stressed. I felt a lot more stressed during the Watford game for some reason. I don't know if that was just because they were so rubbish as well. It felt like, God, we've got to beat these. But
well, it was the must win because it was a 6 point,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. But this one, I don't know, it was just a little bit boring. Like the last 10 minutes or so, I was kind of glancing at my phone to see what everyone else made of it because I didn't really want to watch two teams just pass the ball to each other, chatting to our art wizard, Eamon, and he made the point that he looked up and there was 70 minutes gone. And it felt like 20 minutes later he looked up and there was still 70 minutes gone. It just felt like the game that was never going to end.
It was a bit like those many games at Elland Road where you'd look at it and you'd be thinking, oh, fuck. there's more of this to watch. Whereas we've not had that for such a long time, have we?
No. We were spoiled for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I know it's not been particularly effective versus the years before it, the Bielsa football, but it is undeniably a beautiful thing to watch, even if it's completely flawed at the same time.
Yeah,
and we were asking for pragmatism, and we've got it. So,
yeah, Nowhere Man actually making the comparison, saying there's been a lot of comparisons with the height of Bielsa ball, but we haven't seen that this season. It's mostly been awful.
Yeah,
which is absolutely true.
We tried to do Bielsa ball, but we weren't very effective at it, were we?
Yeah, we weren't able to do that, and now we're not able to do this thing either. Which is, we kind of touched on it, of knowing what this is meant to be, because I'm sure this isn't what Marsh wants. Like this can't be his plan. And he touched on it in his post-game stuff, didn't he? That this was not the attacking side of it wasn't as he hoped for it to be. And I guess that's pretty obvious when you watch it, because there's no kind of passing there, is that there's something is not working. And I think it maybe is the fact we still don't have a striker.
Yeah, and we're still lacking bodies in midfield. And I guess that was the inherent risk, wasn't it, as we were saying on the match ball, of changing the manager when we did. Rolling the dice, knowing that we don't quite have the squad either to do what Bielsa wanted to do or what Marsh wanted to do. And I guess it goes back to the failures of last summer, doesn't it? And we'll know in another few weeks' time whether they got it catastrophically wrong or whether they did just enough.
I think that's the thing, yeah. They made such a big change. We were almost kind of looking at, well, what's the new big idea going to be? But it's just not the time to judge that yet, I guess, because, like I say, we're still dealing with all these same problems, and Marsh has had however many weeks and not had a pre-season or a transfer window to change that. So, yeah, it's kind of like, I know this is Marsh's tactics and style, but it's not how he wants it to look, is it?
No.
So, and it'd just be nice to have a few more glimpses of that, I guess, because against Leicester, it felt like, oh, yeah, we can see the differences in this and we can see how it might work, whereas the more recent games have been a bit turgid. And Marsh himself, it's the Southampton game, he came out and says, yeah, it was a bit rubbish, that, wasn't it? And then after Watford, he came out and said, yeah, weren't great on the ball then, were we? And after the Palace game, he's done the same. So it's three games in a row where it's been a bit like, yeah, that's not what we want.
Yeah, Tom in the comments that we've received says it's going to require some very slick passing from our tens to correctly execute what Marsh wants us to do and those feeding them, and then a high-quality finisher to put the chances away. So it's all those points, isn't it? All the deficiencies in the squad that we've talked about are exactly there, what Tom's on about. I think we can all see it, can't we? I think what it is, and the reason why we're seeing so much of this polarised argument on Twitter of Marsh versus Bielsa, which is just, it's just a lot of wasted energy, in my opinion, and I can't be bothered wading into it because there's truth on both sides of it. It's just filling the void between now and knowing our fate, whether it was the right thing to do or the wrong thing to do. And even if we do go down under Marsh, there'll still be arguments. People say, well, we're going down under Bielsa anyway, so they had to make the change. It's like, it's just nature hating a vacuum again, isn't it, and filling it with something.
A few people have mentioned James as a striker as well, just pointing out that it's really not working. And when we're trying to feed off scraps and it doesn't stick up front at all, it does create a problem for us. Because
is it intended to stick though, Michael? That's what I would wonder, because the nature of March football is, it's all transitional, isn't it? It's high-speed transitional, stick the ball in behind them. And unfortunately, because we haven't yet got accustomed to passing through the midfield in the penis formation or whatever it might be, they're just going for the more direct.
It feels like if it's up towards Bamford, though, there's more of a chance of him getting something on it, which, if nothing else, means if the ball deflects off to one of their players, it's not in a comfortable way. And then Harrison or Rafinha or someone will then press if it drops to the fullback, for example, they then press the fullback who might give it away. And then you win it back and you score from that transition. Whereas it feels like with James up front, it's generally, anything high is a very comfortable header for a centre back because they're a foot taller than him. And it's not really his game, is it? So I don't feel like he looks comfortable doing it. He looks less comfortable as a striker in this formation than he did under Bielsa as well.
It's interesting, actually, when you compare us to what Palace did. And I think Palace weren't playing a style too dissimilar to what we're trying to achieve in that, I mean, I think I mentioned this on the match ball, actually, that, you know, when they were hitting Ayew in the inside right channel in the first half, there was a lot of that going on. It was early balls, but they were finding a man in space rather than punting it to a midget who's up against a massive centre back. You know, so I think it's just being a bit more street smart, isn't it, with where you can find those spaces, you know, and they must try and find them at least. I know we play narrow, but part of the, surely the tactic is going to be to find pockets of space, because going and standing next to people doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean,
you're a coach.
Yeah.
You've got some expert opinions on this. So let's compare it. Standing next to people or standing next to some space?
I think when you've not got the ball, standing next to people is good. Mm-hmm. When you have got, when you, your team has the ball, try and get away from the other people into an area where you can receive the ball.
And then comfortably. What then? Because bloody hell, this is...
Pass it to someone else who's done the same thing. And you keep doing that
until
you get someone in the box and then they kick it really hard into the goal.
Bloody hell.
Simple. It's a simple game.
Should we get in touch with them and just say, listen, if you need some assistance,
get this bit edited out because we don't want to give away our plans to other...
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we're
Pep's listening.
Crucial. We're at a crucial stage.
Speaking of that level of coaching, actually, Jelly got in touch to say that it confused his six-year-old because he said he let his son stay up to watch the match, but wouldn't let his son stay up to watch the match, but promised he could watch the highlights in the morning. He was absolutely bewildered when it finished without one for us.
did we not have any highlights in the packing?
I mean,
to be fair, the fact that I didn't go and watch it and I don't know probably answers that question.
We didn't have any shots, did we? There was one where Rafinha cut in and it looked like he had a chance, but then he got blocked. And then Gelhardt really tamely hit a left footer at the keeper.
I think that was the thing. I wanted to watch the game back to sort of see what happened and why maybe it didn't work from our point of view. But then I thought, I don't want to watch the actual 90 minutes back. It was just not fun.
There's a weird vibe. Scrooge is picking out the weird vibe. Like, we're 5 games unbeaten and 2 clean sheets, which is what Jesse Marsh picked out in the post-match as the positives to take from that. And it's absolutely true. It is. He said it was like someone telling me about a dead good TV series like The Wire and enticing me to watch it and then trying really hard to like it, but ultimately losing track of what the plot is and putting something better on.
Comparing this game to The Wire is wrong.
Yeah, because The Wire is a masterpiece. It has to be said. But we are evangelists for The Wire.
But
there isn't anything better to put on, quite frankly.
No, this was more like...
But I take the point, yeah.
This was more like an episode of Coronation Street spread out over 90 minutes, is what I would say.
The omnibus.
It was that kind of a level, I would suggest.
But Scrooge, sorry, says, just everyone else, please lose. That is one of the themes that seems to be annoying people, like... So we shouldn't have to rely on other teams. We should do it ourselves. But surely the whole point of a league table system is that other people will lose and you take advantage of that by getting slightly more points than them. And you know, the truth is you don't win many games down at the bottom. So.
No. And if we just did it all ourselves, are you saying we need, you know, we're going to get another 15 points this season and finish ninth again? It's not likely, is it? So no. I must admit, I didn't see Burnley's good run coming. Mm-hmm. That's upset me a bit.
Well, we'll talk about all that properly in Relegation Watch over on, which is basically here for the long haul now. It's here till May at least. But we'll talk about that over on the main show when we do it. Back to the themes here. Are we wanting to twist the knife a bit more on Zaha for his vicious assault on Rafa's eyebrows?
I mean, there was some contact, wasn't there? Yeah, questions asked of whether it was looked at by VAR.
It has to be said, by the way, you may have seen this, you may not have done, but there's a Palace fan account that has pulled the footage from every single incident where Zaha went to ground in that game and declared why he was in. The subtext is he doesn't dive, because obviously one of the accusations that's come out in the wake of this is Calvin Phillips saying, yeah, he dives a lot, which anybody through objective eyes can say he does. Like, for example, Luke Ayling dives, but we laugh at it because it's funny. We know what he's doing.
And he laughs at it. He gets up and he does a little wink and he's like,
yeah. All you got to do is just own it and go, yeah, he does. Zaha does. Yeah, he's great at winning free kicks because he's the most foul player in the Premier League?
Because Grealish has had his minutes cut down.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe just a bit of self-awareness. That's all we're asking for.
The most fouled list, it is basically a list of the players who you know dive.
Yeah.
There's absolutely no doubt in it. You look at it and you go, oh yeah, they're all cheats.
But it's amazing what the bias and the filter puts on it, because I looked through that list and I was like, yeah, fair enough, that was a foul, yeah, maybe he's tripped him up there, they've come together there, and he has tried to be objective in a couple of them, but it's always with that subtext of, but he went to ground because they just ran into each other, but then he got straight back up again.
But the thing is, he always moans about it though, and it's the way, maybe it's partly the director's fault, but it felt like every time he was fouled as well, it cut to a shot of his face with an absolutely incredulous, like, referee, I cannot believe you've allowed that to stand. It's the fact that he doesn't think physical contact should be part of the game when it very clearly is in every other aspect. And the way I always see it with, I think I mentioned this with Grealish last year, imagine every player on the pitch going down under that level of contact and you'd be left with an absolute farce. You'd have a completely unwatchable sport because it'd just be every challenge would be two people running into each other and then
falling over.
Like, no one would ever be able to run with the ball because...
And we're not a million miles away from that. I think the only thing that prevents it actually is VAR, funnily enough, because you can look at stuff and say, well, he's just... For example, that one with Zaha where he went down the outside of Luke Ayling and it knocked it off inside. He was going to try and get the return ball down the line. He quite clearly just jumps into his leg. And this is in this thread of stuff of, you know, explaining his crimes, etc. It's like you can see he's just run straight into his leg. It may well be a foul, but you can see he's just run into his leg and then gone over. It's just stop fucking moaning.
It's really weird how that list of sort of fouls won has become like a thing that is seen as you should be proud of this. It was like the other year when Grealish was at Villa and it was, he's the most fouled player in Premier League history by this huge margin.
The Corinthian spirit.
Yeah, it was presented as like, he's so good, people are kicking him out of games every week. And it's like, maybe there is an element of that, of tactical fouling, but it's also because he's a massive cheat as well. Like, yeah. And there's no harm in saying, yeah, the guy dives a lot. Yeah. But it's like, why is you've won 100 and odd fouls like something? That's not football, is it? Like, have you scored a goal? Have you made some assists?
And
was,
I mean, they were bitching and moaning about the ref as well, not protecting him enough. And there was talk of the ref having complained. That's what Philip said, complained to us about fouling Zaha, wasn't there? So, sure.
Zaha, just to put it in context, 87 times he's been fouled. Ivan Toney is next on the list with 70.
Right.
So it's quite a big gap. He did well in this game to improve his margin. He's winning the league by a margin at the minute.
If you're a
Palace fan watching this on YouTube, don't leave a comment. Don't care.
Yeah, because what we'll do is we'll just ignore you and then delete it.
Yeah. I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
This isn't for you. You've got your bias thing. This is ours. And we think he's a cheat.
Excellent. What were the other themes then before we wrap this half of the show up then? We probably didn't
talk enough about the fact loads of people were just saying, it's a point, isn't it?
Yeah.
that's all right.
That's the pragmatism I was referring to. Yeah.
Yeah. And people saying, you know, nowhere man saying there'll be complaints about the system and how we play, but we don't have the luxury of worrying about that at the moment. And also making the point that this isn't Marsh's team. He's come into this and he's doing the best he can with it. And to go back on the midfield thing, like, I'm sure he was probably thinking, well, I'll get Phillips back. Then I can have Phillips and Forshaw. Got two midfielders who are better suited to this kind of the double pivot, deeper system. And then Forshaw is injured and he's back to playing Click there or Cock there. And he clearly can't decide who is the better there because he keeps starting Click and then taking him off.
And likewise up front as well. If it is the hit the penalty spot kind of tactics, you need Bamford there or actually a striker. Whereas with James, it's not suited to him at all. And Gilhart's kind of had injury issues while he's been here as well.
It's funny, like Greenwood's sort of passed him a little bit in the pecking order in the short term, hasn't he?
And Greenwood's versatility as well. He seems to like him as the 10 or one of the wide 10s, as he likes to call them. But Greenwood does seem to, he really loves him, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, fair play to him if he fits the system. Hopefully he's got a good future because we want as many of the lads who we've brought in, the younger lads, who we brought through our academy, to be as successful as possible.
Oh, he was here from...
Oh, since the age of 20. 19, yeah. I remember him.
Via Sunderland and Arsenal. Yeah.
There was a general overall feeling, I think, of it being neither here nor there and essentially dragging out the torture, which is what it is. That's where we are now. Because people were asking during the game, tweeting me, saying, "Are you in the bathroom yet? Are you walking around the car park?" I didn't find that massively stressful against Palace on Monday. I've resigned myself to the fates now in that whatever happens with this season will happen. And it's out of my control now because the stress levels have got so high that I'm choosing not to acknowledge them.
I've done similar where I'd no longer think that we're going to get relegated, but it's not out of any confidence. It's out of just, I am not thinking about it.
It's denial.
Yeah. I think that's probably the right word.
I think as well with the other thing with stressing about a draw is that it is completely dependent on other results. If Burnley had lost even one of those games and we get a point here, we're kind of comfortable with it. And if Everton got a point against Leicester, didn't they, in the last minute? If other teams would stop getting points, a point here would be fine. Not long ago, I thought 32 points might be enough to stay up because Burnley didn't look like they had any life left in them.
But then again, you look at the results from the weekend, Everton losing at Liverpool and we drew. So we've extended by another point at this stage. And I know we've got Man City at the weekend. That's the caveat there, isn't it? But Everton have got Chelsea. So as long as we match their result, then we're no worse off, but another game has been chalked off. So hope is all that's left. The lack of passing, that's been mentioned by a few people. And again, it's all been caveated. Like Maximo Paz is saying, the standard 1 point is better than 0 points disclaimer, but doesn't like the style of football. Describes it as dreadful so far. I mean, it says the way they've clearly been told to lump the ball up the pitch feels like footballing malpractice. I don't know that they have been told to do that. I think that's their, it's their bastardized version of what Marsh is trying to achieve. Mm. And it's not pretty at this stage. And hopefully it will fall into place if we stay up and we get into next season with reinforcements and the squad's looking a bit more balanced and all that. I don't think they've been...
Part of the problem with tactical plans is as well, they all work fine in theory because the other team, in theory, does what you expect them to do. And if the other team doesn't do what you expect them to do, it's like the old Mike Tyson quote about everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. And it's a bit like that. You kind of go, oh, we're meant to do that. And then we get around the back because they are out of shape because of this. But then if they don't do it, you're like, oh, fuck. I'm sure a proper manager isn't resigned to it in the same way. But you're like, no, that's meant to work. I looked at that and it was going
to
work.
Is that what Click was talking to Marsh about?
Possibly. Oh, fuck. This isn't working, Jesse.
I mean, I do agree that, I think we said this on the Match Ball and Moscow's Apprentice in the comments, sort of saying that we've taken all the good things away as well to a certain extent. Like we're saying about like Phillips and Rafinha being less effective. And, you know, Phillips is just back from injury. So we need him to get back up to fitness speed and then, you know, mesh into the tactical system or whatever, don't we, first? So there is that. And hopefully we get Bamford back for the last couple of games. But we do seem to have kind of, maybe we've narrowed the parameters a little bit in that we've taken away the worst aspects of what we do, but we've also lowered our ceiling as well.
Yeah, well, that's how we're set up now. We're compact and defensive in a way that we never were before. So we do give the ball away a lot, but doing so isn't catastrophic because there are still eight players in between the Pelé with the ball and the goal, and they're all zonally marking it, so they're not all being completely pulled out of position when it does go wrong. So it's just more normal.
Yeah, Philip, Moscow's Apprentice is saying that Phillips looked like your run-of-the-mill central midfielder. Rafa could have been Andros Townsend after a trip to see his hair doctor. We look less likely to win, but less likely to lose.
Yeah, I enjoyed Richard's comment as well. I've learnt what Marsh ball is. Work your bollocks off to win the ball, give it back to them. Work your bollocks off to win the ball, give it back to them and repeat.
I think we had that one on the, was it on the comments on the Match Ball actually? Yeah, top props there to Richard for that, because it's what it feels like at the minute, which is not easy.
I think the pass completion was something like 67%, but it felt a lot lower. I'm sure if you looked at passes completion within their half or something, it'd be way lower than that.
It was terrible against Watford as well. It is that thing of they all stand close together even when we're on the ball, so we can't be counted. But I would just love a winger to stand on the touchline. It would just to have that space, because it'd blow their minds, I think.
Like, I mean, God, if you're a long enough time fan to remember it, or old enough to remember it, there are George Graham-y vibes about this, aren't they? Like, in just getting it done correctly from a basics point of view.
Yeah, and that did work. Yeah. And sure enough, which we'll talk about later, the year after was better. Like, there was more of a plan to it. The first year was, let's just get this done, make sure we don't go down,
We scored 28 goals in one season, do you remember?
I remember it really well. I mean, I don't remember any of the games, obviously. I remember the feeling of it. There was nothing actually memorable of the games.
And if you weren't there, the fans at one point started singing, "We'll score again, don't know where, we'll score again some sunny day."
Yeah, I think we had 3-0-0s back to back at one point, didn't we? And everyone was just like, oh my God. Whereas now, 3-0-0s back to back, give me them.
Yeah.
I'd absolutely love that.
I did find the sight of Rafinha taking long throws. Like, oh God, this is what we're doing now, isn't it? It reminded me of, do you remember we signed Connor Wickham on loan after earlier in the season? He'd torn us apart. Did he play in the 6-0 at Hillsborough? And then within about 2 weeks at Leeds, he was just on the wing taking long throws. I don't think he ever scored for us.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare tri-term medical plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Part two is where we do opposition fans. What did they think of it? What did they think of us? What did they think of the game? What have we found this week from Palace first then, Michael, before we get to the wider world of propaganda?
Not a huge amount of stuff from Palace in terms of number of YouTube channels and stuff. Tristan03 is the first one, which I suspect when he signed up for that, he maybe didn't realise he was going to have a successful YouTube account because it's not the catchiest, is it? It's like just the third Tristan on YouTube.
Yeah.
But he did like a little vlog in the stadium. I think he goes with his dad. He sounds even more depressed than me most of the time, does Tristan. So I've got quite an appreciation for him.
I like the sound of him.
This is him in the stadium just this during the first half when Leeds fans were doing the We Are the Champions of Europe thing, and he was impressed.
These lot just won't stop singing. They've been doing this for the last 5 minutes. Good support, but out singing this right now, man. There's no comeback right now from the Palace lot.
Bless him, the Palace Ultras.
The Ultras.
The cosplay Ultras.
Bless him, but you know, they're trying to make an effort to put atmosphere in the ground, which is good.
It's the way that I think it's... It's the way they all dress up in black and have big flags, and then I suspect they're all just quite nice lads, really. Which I myself am, don't be wrong, I don't want to fight anyone, Christ. Get me head kicked in.
Scared by the word Ultras, aren't you?
But yeah, I think if I had to fight any Ultras, I'd probably go with the Palace ones. Yeah, not like the Lazio ones.
Give the Lazio ones a
swear. Or anything Eastern Europe. No, thank you.
It is all a bit MLS, isn't it, when they're sort of getting really into it.
But it's good. I like anything that preserves atmosphere in football grounds. True. And Selhurst Park is a traditional football ground as well. I know we trash it being in Croydon and all the way down there and all the rest of it, but at least it's a ground you recognise from your childhood.
It's a brilliant shithole.
Yeah.
Which is just like Elland Road.
Exactly.
So I like it. I mean, and also I watched the Merseyside derby and the atmosphere, and that sounded terrible. Yeah. Considering it's a big derby, obviously a lot to play for on both sides, it just sounded shit from start. I think Liverpool scored and there was a bit of noise, but I was amazed at how quiet that was.
They were singing Going Down to Everton, which I hope comes to pass.
They were singing Rafa Benitez as well, weren't they?
Yes, very, very. That was quite funny.
Oh, we should say at this point, before we play the next clip, by the way, look out if you're a TSB Plus member, Propaganda Extra, little bit. So the bits we can't fit into this show for time, because we always end up with loads of clips, but never enough time to play them in. So we're going to launch a little spin-off show, just all the bonus bits that we can't fit into this one. So check out your feed for that. On to the next clip.
This is just him post-game in the car, sounding, yeah.
Does he sound happier than that?
Not really. He thinks they should have won, which, you know.
Yeah, it's one of them games, you know. Just all over them, didn't score, it happens. But we've seen that too many times this season. I think that's the frustrating thing. I'm not being negative, but I'm just disappointed that we didn't bloody capitalise on our chances and score and punish Leeds, because they were tired towards the end of the game and didn't really create much. And I don't even think they had a shot. It was poor, poor.
They had one shot that our goalie saved, but Leeds weren't much. I mean, Palace, we deserved the win. Great effort by all the players. Can't really fault them. The end product, we got to get better.
And we're slow, our distribution,
you know,
well, really
particularly second half. We should have easily won. Not easily won it, but we had our chances to win it. But, you know, look, it's 0-0. Let's move on.
Yeah.
That's so much of the Premier League right there, isn't it? It really is.
What do you mean?
Just kind of, well, you know, 0-0, move on. Couldn't break them down. Mediocrity.
We exist.
Well, and this is what we're aspiring to be, aren't we? We're aspiring to be mediocre next season rather than swimming around the plug hole. Anyway.
Back of the nest, get a bit angrier anyway. But before we get onto that, just general game summary. He's a very American man doing this, but I actually really quite like him.
Just on those comments from Tristan03, do you agree that they deserve to win?
Probably.
On balance.
If they had won, it would have been hard to argue with, I guess, but I don't think they battered us or whatever he said.
Nah.
It was a
0-0, 1-0 kind of game, wasn't it? I think, obviously we didn't deserve to win.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have any shots.
No.
They did have, the thing is, one of theirs could have gone in, like Zaha had forced a couple of saves from Melier. There was the one that went over the, deflected over the bar from him. Gallagher had one that went narrowly over. So they had.
It was that chance in the first half, was it Mateta, where the ball went across the goal and it looks like he just had a tap in and Lorenzo got a really important touch, which that was probably the biggest chance.
Ah, well.
Yeah,
Mateta had a couple. There was another one that was put across goal and he like twatted out the stadium more or less as well at one point. So, yeah. They probably did deserve it, didn't they?
Ah, well.
Not together.
We were the better side in this match. Let's be honest. I mean, Leeds just didn't look good. They didn't. I mean, they had a ton of mistakes, a ton of giveaways that we should have capitalized on that we didn't. To work this hard, to have any chances, and to be in a match like this where we really needed to show an improved performance coming in, we need those goals. Point blank, period.
Point blank, period.
That's a great finish, isn't it? Yeah. He's got a nice voice, hasn't he? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's got a sing-song quality to it. I like that.
He's got quite...
If you're an American listener or viewer, could you tell us where that accent's from?
why is he support? But I'm intrigued by people support teams that they do, I suppose. But he seems to really get it, the Palace thing.
Americans love eagles.
That's very true. Yeah.
They dig an eagle.
Yeah. But yeah, he seems to kind of get the culture side of being an English fan and stuff. It's quite nice. Might not come through in this, but I liked him. And he's got a nice laid-back approach.
The way that Wilf got kicked about today was a madness. Like, thank God that kid's got strong legs, because I tell you what, even if you did that in Sunday League, your legs are finished. Like, all he had to do, right, to settle that game down, because towards the end of the first half and in the second half, he lost control of the game. And the reason being is, put it this way, if Joel Ward has to put his hands on your neck, you know something's not right.
If Joel Ward puts his hands on somebody, it lets
you know there's not right. So Joel Ward had to go and officiate the game himself because the ref just was not on job. Luke Ayling and Click should have been on, what, 2-3 red cards today?
I mean, so that would have been two referees that have had on their side as well as Zaha. They were suggesting that Ward needed to ref it as well.
Mm, 2 or 3 red cards.
Yeah. The game, I mean, I know we're doing that dinosaur games gone soft nonsense, but what the fuck are you talking about? There was a bit of needle in it, but it's almost a non-contact sport now, isn't it?
The needle was mainly because from perfectly fair tackles, both Gallagher and Zaha were absolutely rolling about the floor as if they had been badly tackled. Gallagher in particular did a couple where he made it look like someone had put in a leg-breaking tackle, and you saw a replay, there was absolutely nothing on it. If there was a touch, it was a minute touch across his leg or something.
Yeah, but they've got strong legs, Rob. That's the important thing. Yeah, thank God for good that. Strong legs, which is very important in football, having strong legs.
And also, the needle was like the most interesting part of the game, because the rest of it was crap. That was the only bit I really enjoyed. Like, Ayling's battle with Zaha was hilarious for the most part.
And what about Joel Ward's hands? Has he got something special about it? If Joel Ward has to put his... Oh, my God!
He's got big, strong hands.
You're in touch by Joel Ward! Lay your hands upon him, Joel! Just ridiculous. You know it is serious.
All right, let's say this one then. This is about Luke Ayling.
First and foremost, I don't know how Ayling plays 90 minutes in that game, in that match, and doesn't get a yellow card. He had to have at least 7 fouls. Not carded one time. Matter of fact, the first card in this match didn't happen until the 80th minute. Y'all can correct me if I'm wrong, but somewhere around there was the first time that a card even came out. But Ayling in particular, the guy plays recklessly. Like, that's his game. You can tell he's a very reckless player. But I was just upset with it because it's just another time when we've gone out and a team has just rotationally fouled with Zaha, and then completely gotten away with it.
Good.
I mean, Ayling did commit a lot of fouls were given against him, and I was surprised he didn't get booked for a totting up process.
I thought he had been
because normally they'll do after like the fourth, they'll do like a there.
So everybody knows.
So you're having that, and he didn't get that. But then also you watched him back and you thought, well, after we're barely fouls in the first place.
Yeah.
I do feel like the Leeds players sort of recognised they needed to help Ayling fouling him, because then Click had to go and then Phillips had to go. Oh, well done, looking out for you, mate.
If they did rotationally foul him, I'm pleased.
In fairness, though, to go back to the Sunday League thing, it's not, I mean, I'm sure it's more tactical at this level, but at Sunday League, if they've got a really annoying player, everyone does try their best to kick him.
And wind him up as well.
And like, you'll see an opportunity, you'll think, oh, I'm going to do him here. I can have a little kick at him and upset him, because it's...
And when you see them get upset, you think, I'm going to do more of
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
It's great.
Well, that's upset him. That's just reinforcing my behaviour now.
Absolutely fair game.
Yeah,
and Zaha does get upset by it all the time, so it's worth doing.
Did you notice in that clip, by the way, the guy whose name, I don't know, do we know his name? Anyway, he sounded like Bill Clinton, just very periodically went, for the first time. You know, now Clinton's voice kind of croaks just a little bit. It was very nice. I enjoyed that. Right, what's next? We've got a chat about Joel Ward
in his hands.
The main thing I would have wanted from him is him to not get beat by Rafinha.
And to be fair to him, he held him up. I mean, the fact that he nearly put Dan James into the stand, I was like, yes, come on, Wardy, that's it. Throw the little shit.
Come on, he chokes on that one. Look like he's about
Do you
to
know just... what I mean?
Don't call him a little shit. He's a little scum bastard. Yeah.
Get it absolutely right.
All right? He's got a name.
I have to say, I'm sort of low-level enjoying Dan James, because we're heading for a record number of yellow cards in the Premier League ever, aren't we? I think we're too short of the Premier League record, which I think we've got 93 this season, or 91, and the record is 2 more than we've got. We'll easily break it. Dan James on his own is going to break that. And it will forever give us the dirty Leeds tag, yeah, which we should own and wear like a badge of honour. Dan James should be the flag bearer for that.
I like Dan James in particular because he's so small. Like when he clatters a defender and they get up and want to look all big and hard, it's like, oh, but I mean, I don't prove anything here.
I think I've said before, but I like, if you watch Dan James when they do the close-ups of him, any replay, he looks confused. No matter what he's done, he looks really, really confused. So he's kind of got that blank, neutral look, even when he just booted somebody and he knows he's done it. But what? What's wrong?
Yeah, I think when Ward stood up, I think he wanted an argument, but Dan James was just, he was not in for it. He was just sort of going, yep. He was just kind of looking away, almost trying to hope that the aggression would stop if he just didn't interact with it. It was just like, yep, I might have kicked him then. Never mind. I mean, it was a good foul, was that? But that was equally, that was, to go back to the madness of Zaha's legs just about surviving what was essentially a car crash of a tackle from Ayling every 2 minutes. That was the only bad tackle in the game.
Yeah.
There was not another challenge in there that was going to injure anyone.
No,
I don't think I can remember anyone.
But people now indulge in melodrama with football for this reason. Like everything gets amped up 50% beyond where it needs to be. Like, yeah, there were quite a lot of fouls. And if we did rotationally foul it, it's part and parcel of the game, isn't it? You've got to deal with it. Stop being such a fucking crybaby.
You need the David Batty attitude of throwing a defender over the advertising hoarding and just taking a throw in like nothing's happened.
Yeah. Pretend it hasn't happened. Like Dan James just looking confused. Yeah. Right, some comments on our style then.
Yeah, you know what? I could have sworn we were watching a Hodgson team today playing in white. I was like, did Roy Hodgson go to Leeds? What's going on? But all this talk of Jesse Marsh is better than Bielsa, I thought we were playing against Hodgson ball today.
Yeah, struck a chord that one. As did the next clip, which is when they're talking about Hodgson and in relation to this season and how, although the league position is kind of similar, it feels different.
Every game this season, I'm excited to watch Palace. Last season, I was looking for excuses not to watch Palace.
And you know what? That's a change in itself. Because, like, you know, I've seen some people tweeting about the fact that, Palace went out, got a brand new manager and spent X amount, millions of dollars to bring in new players to go from 14th to 14th. All right, cool. But what does it mean for us as fans? What does that mean for us? The level of play, what we're seeing, the fact that, like you said, we've got fans that are actually looking forward to watching the matches. You know what I mean? And the fact that, no, I honestly don't think we're going to finish in 14th place, but, you know, here nor there, if we did, I'd still be more happy with the way this season went compared to the last one.
Put it this way. Look at the performances against the big boys this season. We don't beat Tottenham at home under Roy. We don't beat Arsenal at home under Roy. And we damn sure don't beat City away from home 2-0. Away under Roy.
That does, you know, get to the absolute crux of the Bielsa Marsh debate, doesn't it? Mm. Is that if you take away the jeopardy of relegation, which I think is what's clouding everyone's opinion about this, it is more fun to watch nice football than watch dull industrial football. But the daft thing is, the outcome's probably about the same.
Mm. Yeah, I think it's the promise as well that it could eventually be better. Whereas like with Hodgson, what's his highest ever Premier League finish? Probably like 10th or something. And it was
at Liverpool, don't forget.
But not for very long.
I don't think he didn't finish the season.
I was going to say he didn't finish that season, did he? I think he was replaced with them in about 9th or something, and Paul Konchesky at left back. So, but yeah, it's about hope and entertainment, I think, is the thing. And with Hodgson, you're kind of like, oh God, back for more of the same next year.
Well, the hope and the entertainment has come up against the brick wall of relegation, hasn't it, this season? Mm. That's why everyone's getting so upset.
I think also with Palace as well, it kind of shows the effect of new signings and how you can get excited about them and how it's something different. And if you sign players that you don't hate immediately, it's quite nice. You think, oh, I like that defender I've signed has played for England now, hasn't he? And Gallagher, albeit is on loan, has played for England. So that's all kind of exciting, even though they have to lose.
But as Gallagher will prove, he's going to be their Ben White, isn't he?
Well, yeah, it will be hard to replace next year for them because they're unlikely to be able to get someone as good as him without spending another huge chunk of money.
They can struggle while attacking, which is what we've done this season.
I mean, you see this go the other way as well because Palace are obviously happy with it because they're staying up. You've reached a point with like Tony Pulis teams where and Allardyce teams where everyone goes, fucking hell, we can't watch any more of this. And then they sack him and they get relegated. And everyone's like, oh, okay, we should have maybe stuck with him. And like Mick McCarthy at Ipswich as well, when the Ipswich fans absolutely hated him and they were 15th or something, and then they sacked him, and then the year after went down straight away, and he was like, I fucking told you.
And he found it absolutely hilarious.
Which, you know, Fair enough.
I mean, it is highly unlikely. I'm just looking at the table now. It is highly unlikely, but it would be fun if one of Villa or Palace, I mean, Southampton have got 40 points. They're not going to get sucked into it. But if one of them just had a bit of a crap streak and got pulled into this race just to make us feel a bit better.
I mean, they'd have to get no more points, wouldn't they? But
well, it's interesting though, because Villa do face Burnley a couple of times, don't they? Or is it Everton? I don't know. One of the chumps down there. But I just want somebody else to
the
be
chumps
miserable.
Down there with us.
Yes, that's the one. Right, well, that's the Palace propaganda. I think mostly fair. They just need to stop crying about Zaha, don't they, a bit?
Yeah, basically. Once he leaves, let's face it, he wishes he had. Because I looked him up when I was sort of reviewing his behaviour. He's 29 years old. Like a man approaching 30 shouldn't be acting like that anymore. He's more acceptable when he was like 22. But he got his big move, didn't he?
He's been covered in Arsenal for years.
It didn't
years,
work out
he?
For him. Now he's back at Palace and he just can't escape.
I think that's might be why he's so unhappy. He's just I'm stuck here doing this for you now, aren't I?
My fucking life. I should have been a Champions League footballer.
Which I'm sure you go through every day.
Yeah. I mean, he probably is good enough to be certainly, you know, on the bench at Scum or Arsenal or somewhere.
Well, he was on the bench at Scum, wasn't he?
Well, he was, yeah. You know, he could have played Champions League football in his life, but instead he's stuck with this. Oh, well. Oh, well, Will.
Choices, eh? Right, onto the wider world of propaganda. And obviously, we've got some Man United in there because despite being where they are, they're entitled, they're unhappy, and we're here to laugh at it.
Well, Stretford Panic have basically given up, which made me laugh. This is their watch along. This is them going, you have to really listen for it happening, but this is them going 3-0 down against Liverpool.
Not rich at all. We had 3-0. We had Finn's Crispy Pancakes and Crab Sticks for dinner.
Really?
Yeah. Now, rebranded
Liverpool have scored, by the way. Nah, we'll carry on with this conversation.
Yeah, this is better than watching again.
School dinners?
Yeah, sort of school dinners. School
pizza. Oh, I've had school dinners with chips and gravy.
You can tell you were at school in Manchester.
I know.
It is true. Northern boys love chips and gravy.
I did also have chips and gravy very regularly for school dinners, which was...
It's an underrated meal.
It's irresponsible of them to allow it, though, really.
Do you think?
Well, it's not very nourishing, is it? Well,
comforting though, isn't it?
Gravy surely is one of your five a day, but we're now guilty of falling into the same trap that they've done.
That's true.
But yeah, I like that they just can't bear to watch anymore. Where are they in the league? Let's have a look. I've actually lost any awareness of what's going on.
They're still like seventh or
sixth.
Something.
They're currently sixth.
They're trying their best, I think, to not finish in the UEFA Conference League thing
because they're going
to
do.
Because they really don't want to be going to like Slovakia on a Thursday night, do they, to play those games?
Well, they're a game ahead of like Spurs and Arsenal, who've both played 33. And so Arsenal 60 points, Spurs 58. Scum are 4 points off them now, but they've played a game more. So yeah, it looks like UEFA Cup at best, which I think is good.
So the next clip, I think the game's still going on at this point. This is just them kind of contemplating the idea of Liverpool winning things and being really upset by it.
I mean, and ultimately, this is the bedrock of this show, isn't it? Really, the misery of others.
They're going to win a fucking quadruple, aren't they?
We need to make sure.
What we can do about it?
This was it.
Score four goals in 6 minutes.
City have to make sure that don't happen.
Yeah. We ain't doing shit about that.
Unless we've got a Champions League semi-final. About.
We need Real Madrid to win the Champions League.
Yeah.
We need Chelsea to win the FA Cup.
I was going to say Chelsea to the Premier League for a second.
I mean, he's City to win the Premier League.
Yeah. And then Liverpool get one.
Pray to God that happens. Look what you've done to me.
It's true, isn't it? It's the picking the lesser of two evils. Isn't it interesting that they prefer Man City to win than Liverpool?
I think it's because it doesn't really count for Man City, does it?
No.
Because they know they wouldn't be anywhere near them if it weren't for having billions of pounds pumped in.
I mean, and we're going to get to this when we preview Man City on the weekly show as well, because it's going to be, what can you do? Ultimately, I mean, like when you've got the wealth of a nation state behind you and you were able to dope the system for so long and they're going, oh, hang on a second, there's somebody coming over to challenge this now in the form of Newcastle with unlimited wealth. Let's make sure there are regulations in place to stop this happening. But it's too late now, isn't it? Because they've spent all the money. I mean, we looked at it before, didn't we? Like every footballer at Man City is basically 50 million quid and they've got loads of them.
Yeah. Two full teams. And then we'll come on to their under-23s team is also brilliant because they've spent a lot of money on that.
Every footballer at Scum is pretty much 50 million quid or more. They just managed to be absolutely toilet.
Yeah, it's where they've spent it, isn't it? They've gone wild there. They've overpaid. Right, next clip.
RNA Deck. The good thing about Scum being the kind of club they are, loads of these people keep finding. There's always new ones to be found. So this is the game against Arsenal where this was to make it 2-2, I think. They had a penalty.
Yeah.
And Fernandez is taking it over Ronaldo. RNA Deck isn't sure that should be happening. And I'll see if you can detect the point in this clip when he actually misses.
Why is he taking it, man? Why is he taking it? Come on, Bruno, please, please, please. Why is he taking it?
I know it's theatric, but I love it.
He hit the post.
Yeah, he did hit the post.
He hit the post, just in case you weren't sure what happened.
Oh, that's pleased me, is that?
It was good to see Fernandez missing as well.
Because it's nice how they're all sort of turning on him now as well. They all think he's rubbish. He's like the best player for 2 years.
It's, I think it was it the Athletic article that published the, it was the later days of Solskjaer and all the madness that was going on behind the scenes. That's worth a read if you've got a sub for the Athletic. Not a happy place. People going wild in the background doing all sorts of shit that they shouldn't be doing. Good fun, good fun. It's good to see. Next one.
Couple of Liverpool clips to finish on because...
Such a special
club. I watched... Did we all watch their game against Everton?
Yes.
It's good, wasn't it?
It was. And I think I knew there'd be reactions like this because it was essentially my reaction, even not as a Liverpool fan.
Dinkin' side to Origi. Back to Salah. Across the box. Head to the back.
Yeah! Fucking have it!
I'm down your fucking bus parking knobheads! Get in!
Boom!
Get in!
Yeah, fair enough.
Bus parking knobheads. That was from Redmen TV.
I have to say, on Sunday, I went for a practice walk for our charity thing. I didn't want to subject myself to the stress of watching the Burnley game. Didn't really work because I was walked into Central Leeds on the canal and... By Armley, I was just relentlessly checking my phone to see what was going on at Turf Moor in the Wolves game. So I missed the first half of the Liverpool Everton one, but I was following it on my phone when I was on the train home, and they were really quite industrial, weren't they? More so than we were at Palace. What was the final percentage on possession? 17?
17, I think.
Was it Alan, the midfielder, who completed one pass all game?
That was kick-off.
Yeah. Yeah. I read Michael Keane had made 3, and I thought, that's extraordinarily low. Mm. And then someone actually beat that.
Right then, one more clip. Anfield agenda.
Goal! Yes, Robbo! Yes, son! Go on! Andy Robertson with a header at the far post! 1-0! Woo! Take that, you diving pricks! Woo! 1-0! Go on!
Is that the guy who goes absolutely bonkers when they lose?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
I think we definitely had him on last year. But yeah, exactly how I reacted to it. I was fuck off now. Because they were so frustrating in that game. Even as admittedly, we did have some skin in the game, didn't we? Because we obviously wanted Everton to lose. But I was furious watching that match.
That's why I didn't want to watch it. But I ended up getting sucked into it second half when I got home.
You can't have 17% possession and have any complaints for being beat, can you? Like, I know we wanted a penalty.
We're going to write to the PGMOL, Robert.
Again.
Yeah. Just honestly, that if he... And I say he, I'm personalising this into Frank Lampard because they didn't do this before he was manager. So I have to assume that...
Well, have you ever seen Richarlison play?
I have to assume he's had a hand in the club's approach towards this. I think that's the fairest thing I can say. But the lack of self-awareness in doing that when you're in that position at the minute is absolutely astounding at how it makes you look. It just makes you look like such a sore loser and a crybaby, doesn't it?
Good.
Yeah. Long may it continue.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you go. Propaganda for another week. We've had some laughs and some smiles, even if the Leeds game was a bit difficult. Next week, we'll find some other stuff. We'll find some other stuff. But you never know. You never know in this game. And that's the thing. No matter how much you think you know, you never know. So let's just pray for Stuart Dallas, shall we? We're going to go away and record the main weekly show straight after this, where we're going to have relegation watch. That'll be good fun. And TSB Plus members, have a look in your feed as well. Some of the clips that didn't make it into that show, we've got Propaganda Extra coming your way as well, so check that out. We'll see you in a bit.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.